in light of Domestic Violence Awareness Month in October, we're speaking with the International Women's House, a domestic violence shelter focusing on our refugee and immigrant community. Like most everything else, the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated domestic violence. The lockdown, which forced people to stay at home, didn't provide safety for those homes where violence was present. The International Women's House will host a Zoom webinar on Safety is Self-Care on October 14th at 10 a.m. Laura Mora, welcome to The Local Take.
Hi, thank you for having us. It's a very pleasure to be here.
Can you tell our listeners about the International Women's House?
Well, we have a long history. We were established in 1995 in DeKalb County, by DeKalb County Junior League. And at that time, they realized that the community is being diverse and more needs are being required for serving those communities. So the Junior League started looking for resources to establish a program can provide services for that population, you know, the diverse population was coming to the county. And that's how we start being put it together. And after being on there for like 2 or 3 years, we able to be independent, and we have been a certified nonprofit organization, I believe, since 1996.
Now, is domestic violence more prevalent in the refugee and immigrant community versus our native community? And is that
no?
It's the same.
I want, you know, I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is a myth. Many times, what happens is in our communities, in our minorities communities, people don't talk about domestic violence. We keep it like a private issue, something that you don't tell anyone because that will embarrass your home, your family, or your community. And in this. And the American community is more services and more resources and is more people willing to talk about it to find solutions. In our communities, talking about sexual assault, domestic violence, human trafficking is still a taboo. And that's why we are very working really hard in those three issues, because all three are connecting one way or another.
So it's not that it's more prevalent, it's just that it's not talked about. It's kept undercover, so to speak.
Yes, and actually sometimes they use about the culture, they justify the violence against women and children, and also males, because also males can be abused by their partners, females or the same sex. They are keeping it quiet because they feel embarrassment about the situation, and they are very, very worried about what the community is going to tell about them or what the representation of the community is going to be put out. Remember, the immigrant refugee communities came to this country when they had a really bad experience in their own culture, in their own countries. In their own country, they don't believe domestic violence is a problem. They believe it is part of the relationship between a man and a woman. So coming to this place and be able to find resources and realize that they don't have to take the abuse, and it's other options they can reach out, and services and programs and protection, they command it because they also identify then as a part of their culture. For immigrant and refugee women to be able to leave that domestic violence situation is difficult for many reasons. When you are with no support, no language, sometimes no income, only what the one your aggressor is provided, he's the provider for the family, it's very difficult for you to be able to imagine you will be able to be free and be able to make your own decision when you don't know if you want to be able to be, I'm sorry. I don't want to go in over and over, but I think, I'm sorry.
No.
I lost track. What I want to say is these women having the opportunity to make any decisions in their life. Many of them came from their parents to the husband. and then bringing over to United States to start new life with their husbands. And then when they got here, they have nobody to reach out. And they are trying to do the best they can do with what they didn't know. And in their culture, like I say, you tell your mother your husband is hit you, what the mother says, why are you being done? They always put the responsibility on the wife to keep the happy family or to keep the family members happy and comfort, but they are not addressing the issue. Domestic violence is very, in many ways, part of their culture, but is no more than American culture. It's in different ways. What we see more often with American culture is more about the control financially. We see our domestic violence is easier, for not easier, because I think living an aggressor is complicated in any way, because to get to that point, you have to go through a lot, the bad experience and abuse. But I believe that with American culture, they know they have resources. They know maybe in their family, they will be supporting them. They don't have to be ashamed of what happened to them. They have no problems if they divorce their husbands or they are a single mom. It's, I think what the immigrant community and refugee community is being used against the battered woman or the victims of domestic violence is they pull their culture in front of the safety. And they use the aggressor use the culture to abuse and control their partners.
I can understand how that can happen, especially if, as you mentioned, you're an immigrant or a refugee and you don't have anyone else to turn to. So now different communities, you know, at bars, they have messages in the bathroom. If, you know, something is wrong, order this drink. Uh-huh. In schools, many communities have kind of put in place these phrases or these things that people can do to indicate that they need help. Is there something that can happen in the virtual world as well, where someone can kind of signal that something is going wrong in their household?
In the state of Georgia, we have all the certified programs in Georgia who provide services for victims of domestic violence. We're very careful when anyone gets into our website, we warning the person to let them know that if it is safe for them to get into the information, and we let them know how to do it without being tracked. So sometimes the victim reaches out for help on the web, and then she thinks and everything is erased, and then the aggressor came over and checked down which website she was into and what kind of information she tried to withdraw. So yes, it is different ways. The main thing is, I believe that the crisis number, the 1-800 number, Safe Haven for Georgia, because that number will connect the person in the state of Georgia to the closer certified program in the area. So the main thing is when that person calls for help, they have to be resources available. That's the main thing, because you maybe don't have another chance to call out and look for help.
Yeah.
About the symbols you use, you know, some people use the dot at the middle of the hand to say, you know, I'm in danger. Or some people send us emails with nonsense information. Sometimes we get phone calls and we call the police. We ask questions and she can ask yes or no. And we've been sending the police a welfare checkup for them. They dial number like they are trying to order food, or they call us to try to let us know that they need help. And especially because we not only work with the people we have in shelter, we also work with people who are not ready to leave their aggressor yet. We have an outreach office in DeKalb County. Then we part of the Family Protection Center, and it's where we meet the clients when they have the time, when they have the ability to meet with us, or sometimes we communicate with them by phone, by email, by text message. And the main thing for us, the first thing we do when we got somebody on the phone is ask, are you safe? Is that person to speak? If that person say yes or no, it's how you communicate with them. And they send us an email, which is a random email and you don't have any sense, we try to see if any way we can get any location, sometimes to the school system, because they may say, an email say, well, my name is so-and-so, and but I cannot really tell you where I am, but my kids go to the school in this area. We had a liaison with the county board of education in our county who helped us to identify some homes in that way. Or sometimes we got information, you know, by other sources, by people who are providing care for elderly people. We have reports when they observe adults being abused, because we also have the increase of maltreatment for the elderly community now with the pandemic. And it's been, I think, the need, we need to try to find solutions that we have to be creative. We need to try to find another way to reach out, provide the information and the services for the ones who need it. And it's very important right now when people have less access and interaction with others. Because, for example, we got a lot of referrals from teachers at school when the kids speak up about something that's going on at home. Now those teachers have an eye, you know, when they were doing the classes by website and they were with the contact with the students by they having to do the classes when they're at home. They got red flags, then they can tell us, or they were able to let us know if we need, you know, the need in the family needs some assistance.
Laura, what are some of the things that our listeners can do to help the folks that are at the International Women's House? What are some of the things that you need to help provide support?
And well, for the shelters, we have a website, and we have a list of wish lists of stuff we need. You know, cleaning supplies is always a need. We pick up donations for our clients because when our clients are ready to move to their own place, we assist them with first month rent, deposit, utilities, but we also collect them furniture and all the things they need from the household. When they move out, they move to the house, they can start over without no worries because they have everything they need. That's why we collect donations. And we, my director of home science, say, you pick and choose. Yes, we try to get a staff in excellent condition, a good condition, and they will be able to feel comfortable and have it, you know, a good start with our clients. But we also get a lot of stuff from the shelter, because in a shelter, the rotation of the people, well, sometimes things get damaged and we have to replace them. And at the shelter, we don't carry. If you have 4 mugs and one is broken and you want to buy a new set, you want to give us the 3 mugs what you have left for the previous set, we will welcome. Because honestly, in our shelter is going to be, again, a great use. We have a coordinator from the nation, Ms. Lynn, and you can get into our website and see what exactly we need. We've been very fortunate because one way or another, we'll be able to survive through the pandemic, and we've been working 24/7, and we haven't been able to provide for all our clients in-house and outreach.
Well, we're happy that you all serve everyone. And, you know, the sad part is that it's women, children, and elders that are always needing support from people who have violent natures. So, again, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us this morning. The website, again, is domesticshelters.org. Laura Mora, thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for having us.